Get them going. Get them going. What's going on, everyone? We are live, ladies and gentlemen. Depending on what news sites you look at, you might be told the economy is doing great, or maybe it's falling apart. I'm not sure. Or you might be told that climate change is a crisis, or perhaps it's not even an issue that we should be concerned about. It seems like we can't even agree on basic facts anymore as a country. How is this possible? How are we so divided as a country? I dropped my phone, and we're going to be talking about all of this and more on episode 444 of the In the Tank podcast. Welcome to the In the Tank podcast. As always, I'm your host, Donald Kendall. And if I've learned anything from Andrew Cuomo, I know that gesturing wildly with your hands is an Italian thing. And sometimes you knock your phone off the table at the beginning of the podcast. What are you going to do? But hey, we also just lost our producer midstream. So we're just going to be flying by the seat of our pants for the beginning of this podcast. But like I said, as always, I'm your host, Donald Kendall. Joining me, I've got the full crew. I've got Jim Lakely, VP of the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
I'm doing okay. I mean, I still have the illness that that kept me out of last week's show. It might have been COVID. It might have been COVID-19, COVID-20, some new variant. It could have been bird flu. Maybe it's virus X that they're cooking up in a lab somewhere.
Monkeypox.
Not quite 100%. Perhaps my gym rant will be at only 85% energy today. But I am at least feeling better than O.J. Simpson, who is dead.
Oh, throwing the heat. All right. Jim is down with the sickness.
Way to also pick on someone who can't defend himself.
Oh, poor guy.
We've also got Chris Talgo, editorial director here at the Heartland Institute. How are you doing today, good sir?
Doing good. I was reading about the O.J. Simpson death on the internet earlier, and Donnie, it just brings me back to the mid-90s, and just to show you how big this trial was, I was in seventh grade in 1995 when the verdict was read. I was in Mrs. Zybart's English class. Never forget this. They wheeled in one of those giant, you know, carts with the big, you know, huge TV on top. We plugged it into the wall. We watched it live, and I will just never forget that moment in time. Never, ever.
For the first time in a while, the juice is not loose. We also have Justin Haskins. First time in like 6 weeks. How are you doing today, good sir?
I'm doing okay. You know, I guess. Well, I was gonna make another bad joke about OJ, but I feel like we've already got enough of those, so we don't need to do that. I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty well. We just got some very exciting news. Am I ruining this? Are you supposed to segue to me or something like that?
No. Go for it.
All right, we got some very exciting news. We've got another incredible blockbuster poll coming out with the Rasmussen reports. We literally just got the results back this morning. I got a phone call from the someone over at Rasmussen.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. I'm not going to give away any of the juicy details because it's not going live until Tuesday. But it's about voter fraud, and needless to say, it is going to be absolutely massive. It is a blockbuster poll. Back in December, we published what Donald Trump called the most important poll of the year, decade. Right? No, the most important poll of the decade, or
last 20 years.
That's what it was. 20 years. Yeah. And it was the most important story of the year. That's what it was. Where we found essentially one in five voters, mail-in ballot voters, said that they committed fraud in the 2020 election, or they committed some kind of illegal voting is really the correct way to say it.
Yeah.
And we found in this most recent survey, you're going to have to wait until Tuesday to figure it out. But it is It is stunning. It isn't about the 2020 election. It's about the upcoming election. And what we found is absolutely stunning. So very, very excited to share that with all of you next week. We'll probably be talking about it nonstop, including on this show. So tune in. It's going to be huge.
Yes, no, absolutely. We got a lot to talk about today. But before we do, I always have to put that message out there. Especially for our audio only listeners that are probably catching the show on a Friday or later. First off, leave a review for us on iTunes. That'd be greatly appreciated. And you can join us live where we are streaming this on YouTube and Facebook and Rumble and X at noon Central Times on Thursdays. You could join the conversation, throw your comments or questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comment on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. You could support the show with Super Chats. We got that Super Chat functionality enabled if you want to support the show that way. If you want to support the show and you don't want to spend a dollar, just want to spend a couple of seconds hitting that like button, sharing this content, subscribing if you haven't already, or leaving a comment under the video, all helps break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. But before we get into our main topic here, there was a big event in North America on Monday, the great North American solar eclipse. And to the chagrin of many, the world did not end. Cyber attacks did not knock out the internet. The grid is still remaining strong. And as far as I'm aware, our cell phones are still working, except for mine, because I dropped it on the ground earlier. But, Jim, were you locked down with 2 weeks of food and fuel trying to weather the storm that we were supposed to get?
No. Although, you know, it was funny.
Did you hear those conspiracy theories, Jim?
I had not heard those conspiracy theories, but I did hear that Sonny Huston on The View blamed the eclipse on climate change for some reason. So, you know, the our media, as we're going to discuss on the podcast today, is just covering themselves with glory and confidence in the people. So I didn't hear those conspiracy theories. Actually Monday was the one day in the last 2 weeks. I decided I was going stir crazy. I got out of the house. I went to the office, felt like crap. But I was able to use, Cristalgo's eclipse glasses and see, what do we have? Like the 85% eclipse here in Northern Illinois. So yeah, that was pretty neat. You know, the everything looked kind of weird, but you know, we didn't get the full eclipse, action over here.
Yeah, so good. So you spread bird flu to Chris. Fantastic.
I did. All right. Yes.
In reality, the solar eclipse is a fairly rare celestial event that gives people the opportunity to think about the world from a different perspective. Schools like to make a big day out of this, encouraging students to take part in the event. And thankfully, we have sitting congresswomen there to encourage the imaginations and ambitions of our school children. And on Monday, when we were about to have the solar eclipse, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, out of the great state of Texas, was able to share some of her knowledge about the universe to inspire our school children. So we have a clip here of this just rousing speech by Sheila Jackson Lee that I think we should play like 3 minutes of. So Andy, if you have that clip ready, let's go ahead and play it.
And the sun went in a direction, and then the earth. Now those provide unique light and energy, so that you have the energy of the moon at night. And sometimes you've heard the word full moon. Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? The gas is such that we could do that. The sun is a mighty powerful heat, and it's almost impossible to go near the sun.
It's almost impossible.
What you will see today will be the closest distance that the moon has ever been in the last 20 years, which means that's why they will shut the light down, because they will be close to the earth.
Who's they?
Which is an amazing experience. And what we are supposed to experience, and I'm hoping we can, complete darkness.
I'm hoping we can. She crosses her fingers. Will be shut out.
And we don't have any animals around here to be able to, maybe we'll hear some dogs barking. how they are impacted. But you will be able to tell because there'll be complete darkness. This is very serious. So what you're it's here very for serious. Is to see the complete darkness. When I blow the whistle, we're all going out on the field. And Dr. Simmons, I didn't go too far away from the scientific explanation. Is that correct? Okay. All right, so I was near it.
But I was near it.
The impact I want you to have is how you are controlled.
Poor Dr. Simmons.
By something outside of your human experience. That the solar system is bigger than us, though there are solar systems and there are systems that are smaller than the Earth. Still, we're in a solar system, and we depend on the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun. That is our existence. That is what creates our desire for creativity, our music, our weather, our rain, our snow, our cold, our heat, that solar system working. This expression today is the use of the solar system.
This is worse
working,
than I thought.
You are beginning
yeah,
to
I didn't know that. This
bad. You are the science anchor of HISD and the science anchor of our public school system. Some of you are going into engineering. This is what engineering is, to see how our systems work and impact
drag her
how
off
we create
the stage.
Energy.
Is that Dr. Simmons? Someone's going to drag her off the stage.
The tools needed for the earth to be warmed, the earth to be cold, the earth to survive, and human beings to live on the earth. We have yet to know whether you can live on the moon. But I don't know about you. I want to be first in line to know how to live and to be able to survive on the moon. That's another planet.
That's another planet that you're going to see shortly.
Right.
I also didn't know it was that bad. I saw like a couple of little clips on Twitter, but then Jim shared that like 3-minute clip yesterday.
Yeah.
In our Slack thing. And I was blown away. I couldn't believe how terrible that was.
It actually got a little bit worse because she tried to put the glasses on and literally she could not do it for like 5 minutes. They're like hanging like, you know, like cockeyed. Oh, it is hilarious.
That clip was making the rounds on X. And I thought, you know, it's so worse. It's so few places you can see the entire thing. So I decided to grab that with just a few snips in there to make it 3 minutes. But let's see. We'll run down the stuff. So the moon is made of gases. Here are the mistakes, you know, and she says, one of the, administrators there was saying, you know, we have in our audience here today, future, astronauts, future engineers. It's like, I don't think so. If this is the level of science instruction they're getting in high school, I don't think any of those people are going to make NASA's astronaut program. Unfortunately, they deserve a lot better than that. School choice, get those kids out of there. But, the moon is made of gases. It's almost impossible to get close to the sun. This was the closest the moon has been to the Earth in 20 years. I don't think that's true. It's going to shut down all the light. All right, that might be true. Not really, because there's still a little bit of light. There are systems, solar systems, smaller than the Earth. That's science fiction. I think that'd be pretty cool. The sun, the Earth, and the moon are our very existence. You are the science anchor, and the moon is another planet. That's 9 items. I may have missed 6 or 7 others because I couldn't type fast enough. That woman, Sheila Jackson Lee, has been a member of Congress for at least 20 years. She was the ranking member and on the science committee in the House of Representatives and the subcommittee that oversaw NASA and space. She was the chairwoman of that subcommittee.
That's where she learned this, Jim. You know that.
Yeah,
that's where
I covered Congress for several years when I worked at the Washington Times 20 years ago. One of the things that really struck me was how stupid so many members of Congress are. I was blown away. I would thought, you know, to get elected to Congress, you have to have some sort of knowledge. You must have some curiosity. You cannot be a complete dolt and serve in the House of Representatives. Oh boy, was I disabused of that after talking to both sides, you know, Republicans and Democrats. But Sheila Jackson Lee, she is one of the dumbest. And, you know, for her to have learned nothing at all from chairing the subcommittee on NASA and space in the House of Representatives is just, it blows
my mind. It's like, I can imagine her just like, oh, you want me to give you want me to give a speech? Okay, I could just ramble off some stuff. Yeah, no problem. And then she just like does that for several minutes or something like that. But like, not only is she just like wrong and obviously like ignorant and all of this stuff, but she's also like a complete liar, because after this like blew up and people were making fun of her on Twitter and, you know, whatever, X, social media, all of that stuff, she came out and responded to the criticisms. And in part, she said, obviously, I misspoke and I meant to say the sun. But as usual, Republicans are focused on stupid things instead of stuff that really matters. So when she said that the moon was made of gases, she meant to say that the sun was made of gases, right? But that doesn't explain how her follow-up statement to the idea that the moon is made of gases was that those gases are those of which that we can live on. We haven't figured it all out, or something along those lines. So she's just lying. She's just absolutely lying about this and trying to save face. But like, I think that's like even more important to this story, is like her stupid attempt at covering this up. And I know in the grand scheme of things, this is not the most important thing in the world, but it kind of just shows you that, you know, like if Marjorie Taylor Greene or something were to say this, or, you know, some of the other, you know, like a Sarah Palin or something like that, someone on our side, you wouldn't hear the end of it. Like, they'd be talking about this till the end of time. It would be a SNL skit for the next like 5 weeks. But because it's a congresswoman with a D in front of her name, she gets a pass and she gets some, you know, snarky remarks on Twitter or whatever. That's about it. But Chris or Justin, any thoughts on our wonderful congresswoman here?
I think this is fairly important, actually. I think it actually is important, because it illustrates that I've been right all along my whole life in believing that Congress is full of the dumbest people on the planet, or corrupt, or, you know, something like that, or both. And obviously not everybody in Congress is like this, but the fact that anybody in Congress is like this is proof of how screwed up this whole system is. And this is just what we happened to catch in recording that got spread around. Like, who knows what other insane ideas other Congress people have, or that she has, or whatever, that we never hear about, right? And it's like, this just is further proof that we're just like, we're so far gone. We're so far gone at this point that when you add it all up, because it's easy to just look at this one clip and it's like, oh, this is funny and we laugh at it and whatever. But it's like, add this to all the other things. Add this to the fact that we've got, Ilhan Omar, who's like a super crazy radical Islamicist practically in Congress, socialist, who probably married her brother, right? We've got Fetterman, you know, who basically can't function as a human being and feels like he's got to wear gym shorts every time he goes to Congress. And ironically, he's probably not the worst one there, like at all, right? Mitch McConnell, who's had like numerous situations over the course of the last few years where he just like in the middle of talking, just stops talking and his brain just like completely shuts down. Like Joe Biden, who, you know, confuses his wife from his sister and doesn't know like basic facts about his own life. And, you know, and is constantly talking about how, you know, kids like to play with leg hair, hair at the pool. And like, you know, we could go on and on and on about the Joe Biden gaffes. Right. And it's just like, this is the people. It's not just Sheila Jackson Lee. Like that's just one.
Yeah. You know,
there's like a million
that way,
people.
It is inspirational then, because it makes me feel like I could do that. I could go up there. I could give a speech about these things and come off as way more intelligent about basically anything than she did right there.
Of course you could.
I am officially starting my campaign for president. James Miller in the comments, you have encouraged me. I'm going to do it. The Donald 2032. Mark your calendars, folks. Chris, any thoughts on this? I mean, I don't think, and we talked about this before we went live, I don't think that this tops the Hank Johnson from several years ago talking about, like, if we station more troops on Guam, that he fears that he fears that the island might capsize and tip over. I'm not sure that this does. You think so?
1,000%. Because she goes on and on and on. It's the fact that she went on and on and on about it. It wasn't just one thing. It was like 50 things. I mean, maybe maybe next week we should play both of them side by side, like back to back, and see which one's worse. We could vote on it or something, but I don't know. I think so.
Well, Justin, you're right. I mean, we are cursed with the dumbest, least impressive ruling class since the fall of Rome. I mean, that's the era we live in now in the United States.
Well, no, you know, Donnie, I agree with Justin. You know, years and years ago, when I first started like following politics and like getting into this whole like world, I thought, man, these Congress people, they must be like experts in all these fields. Like, they must be geniuses. They must be super experienced. And I've actually met Congress people throughout my life. And to tell you the truth, in real life, they are not even near like the smartest people I've ever met. Yeah, they're typically good at, you know, reciting campaign talking points and stuff like that. And Sheila Jackson Lee, I'm sure she can do that. You know, she's been doing it for 20 years. But when you ask her to go, you know, off the script, this is what happens. So, you know, this is just I would be willing to bet that if you lined up, you know, more Congress members and asked them to just riff on subjects to which they should be experts, they would just produce a bunch of gobbledygook, you know, like she just did.
Kidding. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I want to put somebody on the spot about like something that, you know, that they're passing legislation on and see if it's anywhere as close to what she was just saying here about the moon and our planets. Oh, all right. We got a lot
it's
to
hopeless,
talk about.
Folks. It's all over.
Two words.
You know, but seriously, you know,
maybe we
thing.
Should put AI in charge of everything.
So just like the very last thing, and I know we gotta move on, but like the very last thing, if you still have any, and I know most people who watch this show, you know, or listen to the show, the podcast version, they don't think this, but if you still believe that you have any hope of finding your salvation in the members of Congress, then you are mentally insane. You are just completely insane.
You are on par with Sheila Jackson Lee.
you are certainly you're close to it, because the only thing worse than Sheila Jackson Lee is someone who believes in Sheila Jackson Lee as like an actual answer to a problem. Like, this is truly terrible. Like, there's no hope. There is no hope in Congress or Washington. It just isn't. I'm sorry.
They like turn the camera around on all the kids that are watching. They're just like crying because they're like lost all hope in like our civilization. All right.
No, but Donnie, just one last thing. Just, you know, kind of a serious point. This is, to me, this embodies everything that's wrong with Congress, because people like Sheila Jackson Lee, they're experts when it comes to taking money from the federal government and bringing it home to her district. I'm sure she understands the nuances and the intricacies of all that kind of stuff. But then when you ask her very basic questions about stuff that she should have, you know, knowledge about, she has no clue. So I bet if you were to ask her really significant questions about policies that, you know, that pertain to her district, she would be just as, you know, idiotic.
Well, Russia is a big country and Ukraine is a smaller country. So
at least the people that we have in charge. Yeah, at least those statements were factually accurate.
That's true. No,
we will literally be here for 2 hours if we're just going to keep running down and have a dumb contest among elected officials. So we should.
Oh man, it would be quite a contest. We should have a March Madness bracket about the dumbest politicians. Oh my gosh, we should do that. Okay. All right, let's get to it. Main topics here. So earlier this week, maybe late last week, Linnea Lukin, who is a guest on the In the Tank podcast time to time and a regular on Heartland's The Climate Realism Show, sent around an article on one of our like little internal communications apps that was titled, "What's Wrong with the Economy? It's You, Not the Data." And the subtext of this headline suggests that the economy is doing just fine. It's your perception of the economy that's wrong. And this relates to an idea that many in America are concerned about the economy, inflation, rising gas prices, grocery prices, stagnant wages, etc. All while we're being told that the economy is doing great. The economy is roaring, proclaims a Washington Post article in February, and other articles and headlines from multiple outlets. So this led me to think about a concept that we've talked about a bit on this podcast, and I've had a lot of outside conversations about this topic. And that's the idea that seemingly the left and the right in America are living in two different universes. So one of the first articles that I want to talk about just briefly is from the New York Times. It is a Paul Krugman article. Paul Krugman, best known for being just an absolute hack of an economist. He wrote an article for the New York Times that was titled "Good Economy, Negative Vibes. The Story Continues." So in this piece, Paul Krugman claims that there has been nothing but good economic news. He says, last week we got another terrific employment report. Job growth for 39 straight months. Paul Krugman also claims that job creation has been truly amazing under Biden and that inflation has largely subsided. Everything is great economically, according to Paul Krugman. And then the rest of the article is just dedicated to how upset he is that Americans aren't just recognizing this reality of a great economy. It's not resonating with the average American. So he points to a poll showing that people are overwhelmingly concerned about the economy and basically that they shouldn't be. So when I read this article and then I read articles authored by, I don't know, Chris, that's published in numerous publications, the articles that are written by you, Chris, seemingly have a different take on the economy. So what is it, Chris? Is Paul Krugman missing something? Is there something that he's intentionally ignoring? Or are you just pessimistic?
No, I'm realistic. And here's the fundamental difference. So what Paul Krugman does is he takes a few macroeconomic numbers and he spins them so they sound great. I'll take that jobs number. If you actually look in the inside numbers of that latest jobs report, you would see that most of those jobs were part-time jobs. They were not full-time, high-salary jobs. So his whole thing about, the jobs market is just booming, that is completely not true. Also, if you look at wages are not keeping up with inflation. So people are actually losing money on a net basis. But really, I think this just shows how out of touch he is, how detached from reality he is. I do not think that people like, you know, Paul Krugman go to the grocery store, fill up their car with gasoline and have a real feel for what's going on, you know, for everyday hardworking Americans in this economy. And when you look at the inflation, we just got the latest report, 3.5%. It's spiking up again. And, you know, when you look at the cumulative inflation, because that's all that matters from when Joe Biden, you know, stepped into the Oval Office 3.5 years ago now. It's up across the board, 30% for groceries, 20% for food at fast food restaurants, 30% for baby food, just on and on. Gasoline, 40%. We're now back to $4 gasoline here in Illinois. That has a humongous impact on people who are struggling to make ends meet. We also just got something that the national credit card debt has hit another new record, $1.13 trillion as of the beginning of this month, because people cannot afford to live in this economy. You know, Paul Krugman is just trying to make us, he wants us to think that the economy is good because he cites a couple of, you know, macroeconomic numbers or the stock market, you know, going up and that kind of thing. But that does not actually translate to people who are just trying to make ends meet, put food on the table, pay their rent. And that's the saddest thing about this is how just, you know, how out of touch these people, you know, have become.
Right. And it's not just Paul Krugman. I mean, Jim, we've been talking on this podcast for a while about just like the different economic numbers and all of that over the past, I don't know, year or so. And it seems like, you know, even the Biden administration and everyone that's kind of tied to either advocating for the Biden administration or just like a direct, you know, line to it. It seems like they've been doing this kind of like toeing the line sort of thing, where, you know, they'll be trying to trumpet the idea of Bidenomics one week, and then they're like, oh, you know, let's kind of run away from that term this week, and then they're like, oh no, the economy's booming, and then they kind of soft play that or whatever. So it's not just Paul Krugman. It seems like there's a concerted effort to try to convince us to ignore our eyes when we're driving down the street and going to the grocery store and all of that stuff, and just believe the experts, right? So what's your take on all of this? Oh, I gave you so much time, Jim.
You did give me a lot of time. Yes, I'm sorry. I have to keep more muted because I just cough uncontrollably every once in a while. So anyway, so right after this Krugman piece came out, or around the same time that the surprisingly high jobs numbers came out, and as Chris explained, that's mostly part-time jobs, and is actually more recent immigrants, let's say, either legal or illegal, are taking a lot of those jobs. Those get counted, you know, and citizens that are not taking those jobs. But anyway, but at the same time that happened, it was also announced that inflation was up 3.5% year over year in March, which was way over what, again, the experts that keep trying to convince us that the economy is fine. Once again, the experts were wrong that inflation was actually cooking a little hotter than they had predicted. It seems like they always predict good economies for Democrat presidents and always underestimate good economic news for Republican presidents. Just an observation from several decades of watching this sorts of thing as a citizen and as a journalist. You know, as Chris pointed out, credit card delinquency rates are the worst on record. And, you know, people are able to survive in this economy because they are living too much on credit. I think you undersold the inflation on gasoline, Chris, because I looked up the number and it was 47.8% on gasoline. Rent is up 21%. Electricity prices are up almost 30%. Natural gas, 26%. Even the cost of public transportation is up 22.2%, while the real average weekly earnings are down 3.9%. I don't, you know, Paul Krugman is a gaslighting moron. And everybody realizes this, that no set of economic numbers from the green eyeshade crowd is going to supplant what people feel about the economy in their everyday lives. It never works. I mean, George H.W. Bush tried to convince the American people by using numbers that this is not the worst economy in 50 years, which is what got Bill Clinton elected in 1992, that it was actually a good economy. People didn't believe the numbers because they believed what they were told by propagandists, but also what they felt about the economy that wasn't all that great. And people are not wrong when they think that they were a lot better off both in their jobs and in their wages and in the price of everything 4 and 5 years ago than they are today. And it doesn't matter that, you know, Paul Krugman can write this column every week from here to the election. It's not going to change people's minds. The economy is one of the biggest, it's going to be the biggest factor in this election, probably number one or number two. And it's not good for Joe Biden, because even if the economy was starting to turn around, people won't feel it by November. This is a bad economy. It was a lot better under the previous president. And, you know, it's gaslighting, and it's actually insulting to hear politicians and our elite media try to convince us of things that we know is not true. He's lying. And the idea that we can even trust, frankly, a lot of the economic numbers that come out of our government is itself in question to me. I mean, can we trust any of this stuff anymore when all we get from the people in power and our corporate media is propaganda, not news, not facts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's another article that usually Paul Krugman, I like Paul Krugman because I feel like he gives kind of an insight into what just the narrative that they're trying to push is. So, like, you know, he gives kind of, you can almost like read the tea leaves with him a little bit. But there was another article that kind of set me off a little bit more when I was doing preparation for this episode. And that's from CBS News. And the headline is the U.S. in a vibe session? Here's why Americans are gloomy, even as the economy improves. Okay, so I want to do an anatomy of fake news, like dissection of this article, you know, like the anatomy of a lie type of a thing, but like anatomy of fake news, because I think that this article might be one of the best examples of this that I've come across in a while. So this article is basically saying, oh, we're not in a recession, we're in a vibe session. And the article points out that Americans are gloomy, even though the economy is improving, just like the headline suggests. According to the author of the piece, Americans are simply judging the economy based on their feelings and not economic facts. So it says, for instance, inflation has come down a long way from its 40-year peak of 9.1% in June of 2022. But about 3 in 4 consumers in swing states said that they believe inflation is going the wrong way, according to a recent Wall Street Journal poll. So this is literally, in the article, the only example that they give of this vibe session that we're suffering from. And how manipulative is that paragraph that I just wrote? You know, this idea that people think inflation is going the wrong direction, when in fact the rate of inflation is actually shrinking. And it made me think of, like, you know, what's like a good analogy for that? And the best thing that I can come up with was, like, imagine your house is flooding and the water level is rising quickly. And then after a little bit of time, the water level starts to rise, but a little bit slower. And it's still increasing. It's just not as fast. Do you feel better? Do you feel better? Or are you still very concerned that your house is continuously taking on more and more water? So that's the first three paragraphs of this article. The next 3 or 4 paragraphs are about how interest rate hikes are taking a toll on the economy. And this increases credit card debt, the cost of just managing your credit card debt, all of that, which is an increase to household burden, paying more for groceries and managing the debt that you have. All of this stuff is really taking a toll on consumers, despite the fact that, you know, the rate of inflation has slowed or whatever. And then the next couple of paragraphs is about how the Fed is not likely to cut rates anytime soon. So we're probably going to have to live longer with this added expense of trying to maintain your, you know, credit card debt and all of that sort of stuff. And then it goes into the thing that Chris pointed out, that inflation rates has increased over the past couple of months. It went back up to 3.5%. So yes, lower than that peak level, as they mentioned, but still way above that 2% that the Fed usually targets. And then here's how the article ends. It says, even though inflation is cooling, prices are continuing to rise, albeit at a slower pace than in the post-pandemic inflationary surge. It's likely that consumers will eventually get used to this higher price levels, but it could take some time, says some economists that they're quoting. And then quoting that economist, it says, when people realize, okay, this is what things cost now, and realize they can afford it, the gap between economic data and Americans' views on the economy could close, she predicted. So that's the entire article. So I wager that the vast majority of people exposed to this article don't get past the first couple of paragraphs. In fact, I wager that the vast majority of people exposed to this article don't get past the headline. So all of those people that are reading just the headline, maybe the first couple of paragraphs, and see, you know, is the US is in a vibe session. Here's why Americans are gloomy, even though the economy is improving. They move along with their day with this fake news lodged in their brain that's dictating their viewpoints, at least slightly, of the economy and everything that's going on. And this is just one of a bunch of articles. So New York Times, Paul Krugman, Good Economy, Negative Vibes, the story continues. Another Paul Krugman, New York Times, Why Are Americans Still Down on the Economy? The CBS one, U.S. is in a vibe session. The Economist, America's economy is booming, so why are bosses worried? CNN, the booming economy isn't helping Biden? New York Magazine, it's crazy that the booming economy is hurting Biden. MSNBC, Biden lauds job numbers as Fox must admit that the economy is booming. All of these articles all came out in the past 4 to 6 weeks. So, Justin, I mean, we've been talking a lot about propaganda and fake news lately. It seems like there's a concerted effort to try to just convince people. Again, ignore your eyes, ignore your wallets and how empty it's getting. Everything's doing great. What are your thoughts on all this?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the thing, I think that's 100% true. There's no doubt about that. With so many different kinds of topics, I think the media is very good at convincing people that something isn't a problem when it actually is a problem, or vice versa, right? They're really good at burying news stories. They're really good at getting people to not see something that they should see. But when it comes to the economy, they have a really, really hard time doing this, because everywhere people go every single day, they are reminded about how much money things cost, because that's what life is. You go out and you buy gas. Gas is more expensive than it used to be. You go out, you buy groceries. Groceries are more expensive than it used to be. You need a new apartment because your lease is up. Rent goes up. Insurance prices are going up. Everything is going up. Everything is more expensive. Nothing is cheaper. Almost nothing, right? And so they're constantly reminded by it. So the average person does not read Paul Krugman. A lot of people do, but the average person does not. But they do buy gas and groceries. And so they're reminded every single day, constantly, all the time. And it's the one thing where, unlike, say, the Hunter Biden laptop or Joe Biden's corruption or, you know, a whole bunch of other things, right? Where you're not reminded by it all the time. And if the media that you tune into isn't talking about it, then you're not hearing about it. With prices of with the economy, you experience it, you live it. It's really, really hard to ignore, right? So unless you're super wealthy, in which case you don't really pay attention to what the price of anything is. It doesn't really matter to you. And you make a lot of money, so you're not that worried about the job market. Unless you're in that top, you know, say 15% or whatever of society, you know, you know what's going on, and it's a problem for you, and you can't, and all the Paul Krugman articles in the world can't hide it, and that's the point, right? And so, just to kind of illustrate some of the stuff we talked about, Chris mentioned earlier with data. Chris mentioned earlier a lot of the jobs. So we keep hearing about all these jobs, this booming economy. It's a lot of it is based on the job numbers. As Chris rightfully pointed out, those jobs are part-time jobs that we're seeing being added, not full-time jobs. In fact, full-time jobs, and this is not something that's getting anywhere near enough attention, since November 2023, so not that long ago, right? Like 6 months ago, since November 2023, America has actually lost almost 2 million full-time jobs. Almost 2 million full-time jobs have been lost in 6 months. And we're told this is a booming economy, right? The average rent, if you just go back and you look at average rent in when late 2020, early 2021, the average rent is up by $200 to $300 in America. The average price of a home went from $374,500. We'll do a little bit later. About $400,000 at the end of 2020. Let's just say that, up to $550,000 at the end of 2022. So it went up by $150,000. Then the Fed started raising rates, which made buying a house even more expensive in total, because now it costs more to get a mortgage, but it caused the prices to drop. So now the prices are down to $492,000, the most recent number. So up $90,000 from just a couple of years ago, except the average price that you're actually paying for a new house because of the mortgage rates being higher is even higher than that, right? So even with interest rates going way up, the prices haven't fully corrected. And the same thing is true across the economy with all kinds of different things. So if you're a person and you're spending way more on gas, way more on groceries, way more on rent, way more on your mortgage, depending on which one you have, right? Way more on insurance. I just saw an article the other day that said that insurance prices have gone up at the fastest rate in like 40 years or something. So you look at all this stuff, you say, I'm getting killed. Oh, my paycheck went up by 3% this year, 4%. Oh, great. That's really going to help me out a lot. My rent is $300 more than it was a couple of years ago. So that's where all that money is going, right? And again, the propaganda industrial complex, as I now am starting to call it, they can do a lot of things really well. They can fool people on a lot of issues. But when it comes to the economy, when it comes to what people are paying, they can't. It's just too hard for them to do. And I hope that people are realizing this. I think they are, and it's reflected in Joe Biden's approval numbers and other things. But I think that Paul Krugman and the elites, I think they know this. They've seen this data too. They're trying to lie and trick people and fool people and gaslight people into believing that things are actually a lot better. But in reality, I don't think it is going to work. And I think people are going to hopefully, make the right decision at the ballot box when it comes to these economic issues and realize that all of this is downstream from policy that had been put in place by the Biden administration and by Democrats in Congress before that and by the Fed, that this is all the result of that. And if they don't, we're going to have more of these problems. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. You know, and we didn't even talk about the national debt and about all of that and how that's feeding into these problems. But this is a direct result of the policy decisions of the Biden administration and Democrats and some Republicans who don't want to cut spending and stuff like that, too. And again, it's not going to get better unless we change things. Donnie is muted. How embarrassing. After all the times that he slams Jim, he's muted. Unbelievable.
You know what? But unlike Jim, I'm not going to make an excuse. I take full responsibility for that.
Forget it, Donnie. You're out of your element.
You say that, you know, you hope people will change their mind or like will realize this by the time they go to the ballot box and all of that. But like, even if you're talking about like small percentages of people, like regardless of which way the election swings, it's going to be like 51-49 one direction or the other, right?
No, so way. Like, no. You're discounting RFK Jr. in that. RFK Jr. is polling at 15. I'm dead serious.
Okay.
Let me give you a little perspective from the MSNBC and CNN, you know, crew on this kind of stuff. What I've noticed recently is that they have been very nervous about the economic numbers because I think they know deep down that even though Paul Krugman is saying everything's, you know, hunky dory, it's far from hunky dory, and especially for hardworking Americans. And that's why Ron Klain, the former chief of staff for President Biden, who's been President Biden's right hand man for 20, 30, 40 years now, came out and said, you are completely off when you are not talking about the stuff that actually matters to voters. And he really went off on him and saying, why are you talking about all this bridge stuff when you need to talk about the price of groceries and all that? But it's a difficult move because if President Biden pivots and starts to talk about that, he can't really talk about it in a way in which is, you know, good for his prospects in 2024. So I think they're in a really, you know, difficult position on this. And it's not just his former chief of staff. It's even, you know, Carville, all of them are coming out of the woodwork now saying, oh my gosh, we're 6 months out from the election. And when you look at polls, you know, on the economy, on inflation, even on, you know, immigration and all this stuff, people are really, really worried. And they are, you know, it's not looking good for Joe Biden. So I think that, you know, they're trying to, you know, present this image that, yes, everything's great. And look at all these jobs we've created. But that is not resonating with the people who are going to go vote in, you know, 6 months.
Yeah.
And I think that they are very worried about that.
And I'll add two things to it. So I think that if we had an election, so obviously it's going to be Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. That's the where we're at. If we had an election where this was like, say, Joe Biden against some normal, for the lack of a better word, Republican candidate of the past like 30 years, you know, someone that wasn't facing all these investigations and hadn't been, you know, spent all these years being accused of Russian collusion and all the other stuff, like all the other crazy stuff that comes with Donald Trump. Like, I think that this would be, to borrow a term used by Donald Trump, a bloodbath. Like, I think that's what it would be. I think it would be a total bloodbath in this upcoming election, because I do think that there are a lot of people, I think there's tons of people who would love to vote against Joe Biden, but who may not because, you know, they don't like Donald Trump's personality, or they watch a lot of MSNBC and they think that he's a threat to, you know, to the world and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's coupled with the abortion thing, which we don't talk about here at Heartland. We don't take a position on it, but the abortion thing is unquestionably going to be like a huge issue in the election. And so Democrats are spending most of their time talking about how Donald Trump is a monster who's going to kill everybody if he becomes president, remember, he's the one that took away your abortion rights. And that's basically their whole campaign. Like, Justin, that's the campaign.
Completely agree with you. And I watch and they are definitely on MSNBC, CNN and the others, you know, they are definitely pushing the abortion narrative. But I've also seen some other commentators even on Fox, come back and say, wait a second, abortion is an issue, especially among women. But really, the bottom line is that these women are scared because they can't send their kids to summer camp. Like they can't afford like just to make ends meet. So are they going to vote on a abstract concept of, you know, abortion, whether or not that's going to be able to take place in the second or third trimester? Or are they going to vote on whether or not they can, you know, buy their kids, you know, sports equipment so they can, you know, play sports this fall? Like, what do you think?
I don't know. I think we're going to find out in November, but the bottom line is, guys, I totally agree with you. I think this is the most difficult election in maybe ever to predict the outcome of, because there are so many different competing factors. Mm-hmm. The president is highly unlikely. His poll numbers are terrible. He looks like he's going to die at any moment. You know, he's so obviously pumped full of drugs and confused and everything. Like, he's just the worst. We've had all these problems, foreign policy disasters. Europe is literally in warfare now, open warfare in Europe. Like, Afghanistan's being run by the Taliban. Like, the economy is garbage. It's just like one disaster after another. But then you got to ask, you're asking people not just to vote against that, you're asking them to vote for a guy who a lot of people have been taught to believe is like a Hitler, like a Nazi. Like, that's how they talk about him on these mm-hmm. other networks. And if that's your experience, if that's what you believe, like, you're put in an impossible situation. How am I supposed to know how an independent voter who reads the New York Times and is being pummeled every time they go to the gas station and pay their bills every month, but at the same time is like thinking that Donald Trump is Hitler reincarnated is going to vote in the election? Like that's impossible to do. And then add in RFK Jr. As Chris mentioned earlier, we have no idea whether that guy is going to get 1%, 5%, 10%, or 15% of the vote. We don't know. And it almost doesn't matter what he gets nationally. What matters is what he gets in the states that matter, right? So if he just gets if he just does really well in Georgia, that could, depending on who he's taking votes from, that could flip the election one way or the other. So this is an impossible election to predict. Absolutely impossible to predict. But what we do know is this: either Biden or Trump is going to be president. It's not going to be RFK. So sorry for those of you who like him. He's not going to be president. It's either going to be Biden or Trump. And depending on who wins, the country is going to go in a completely different direction. That's because the policies are so radically different from each other that if depending on who wins, it is going to dramatically change the course of this country for the next decade or more. It's just a hugely important election, and it's not really about the policies. And that, to me, is crazy.
Yeah, let's focus on that radically different part, because that is the main theme of the show here. And I just wanted to point out, last thing on the economy, that it just seems like half of the country, you know, especially those that are reading the New York Times and watching MSNBC, they're in the mindset the economy's doing great. It's fantastic. What are you talking about? Bidenomics is working, all of this sort of stuff. And you've got the other half of the economy that's acknowledging, like, no, it doesn't seem like it's doing that great. And it seems like it might be getting a little bit worse. Like, those are like wildly different positions, right? Those are like polar opposite positions. That's not the difference between it's doing okay and no, it's doing good. Like, no, it's Donnie, bad or it's good.
But Donnie, real quick, but when you poll the American people, they overwhelmingly, like 80%, say that the economy is in very poor shape. So it doesn't matter to me if these legacy media outlets are trying to, you know, convince people that the economy is not, you know, that the economy is great, because like Justin said, they can maybe do that when it comes to stuff like the Biden laptop, because, you know, they can just prevent them from seeing the truth. But this is something that they go out and experience every single day of their lives.
And then there's climate change, where it's, you know, you got people saying that, oh, we're doomed. We're all going to die. For the last 30 years, they've been saying this. And most recent story that I saw is the UN climate chief recently declaring that we only have 2 years to save the world. The other half of the country, not so convinced. And when it comes to the border, you've got one half of the country saying, look, this is a crisis. Look at the number of border crossings. Look at the riots at the gates. Texas is stepping in to return some sanity to the situation. The Biden administration, what are you talking about? Border's fine. It's probably the most safe and secure border we've ever had. When it comes to crime in the United States, it's clear to many, crime, especially in major cities, increasing. It's going crazy. People just walking out of stores with grocery carts full of stuff, car thefts, all of these things, right? The other side, nope, just your imagination. There's no crime going on at all. And it's just like these things aren't differences of opinion. Like it's not like we're trying to agree. We're just like debating, you know, I think we should increase taxes so we could pay for more goods or social programs. Well, I think we should decrease taxes to give everyone a boost or whatever. Like these are like just fact and fiction. It's like somebody saying, oh, it's raining outside. And the other person's like, no, it's not. It's sunny. What are you talking about? So it's like, Jim, how could we have like a reasonable dialogue as a country when we're not even like able to acknowledge like facts on either side, or at least agree upon facts on either side? What do you think? Boom. All right. Now who's in the doghouse with the mute button?
Okay. Okay. Well, you went on so long. Jeez. You know, I had seven coughing fits during that setup. So, but, you know, look, I mean, this is a theme we hit on this podcast quite a bit. And it's the idea that we are living in different universes, and that, you know, like we tease Chris. He's the designated podcaster who has from Heartland, who has to watch CNN and MSNBC so that we are informed about what the other half of the country are propagandized with. I think in the show notes, there's a story about how finally a former senior editor at National Public Radio basically told the truth that everybody that can think critically has known for more than 20 years. And that's that National Public Radio is national propaganda radio for the left and for bigger government, and propagandizes against any reasonable restrictions on government power, and has been doing this for many, many decades. We talk a lot on this podcast about climate change and how humans are not causing a climate crisis. But quite a few people in this country believe the lies and the hype and the panic that if we do not completely upend our entire economy and give more money and control to government, that we are all going to die. And that future generations, you know, Generation Z, are a lot of them don't want to have children because they think it would be immoral to do so, because they would grow up in a basically a environmental hellscape. And that this is causing mental illness among the young, climate anxiety. The data doesn't show that any of that is warranted, yet we live in two different universes in which especially younger people are in a complete panic about the environment, when there is, again, the data shows there's no reason to be in a panic at all. I mean, it's hard to have a functioning free society in which so many, it just seems the United States is cleaved down the middle, with people who believe absolute nonsense and lies, and people who, frankly, and let's just be honest about it, have sought out the truth around the corporate media and around and through that propaganda, and are free thinkers and are not going to, and are harder to propagandize. It's hard to, how does that society select a president that can lead everyone when half the country thinks that Trump is literally Hitler and the other half of the country thinks he may be a little bit quirky, but he is not literally Hitler, and the system we have in place prevents a president from being a dictator. That's not going to happen in this country in the way that the left says it's going to be if Trump is elected president. But yet we have half the country that believes that. And to this day, and we'll kick it over to the other guys, but a great example of this, there are people in my life who I care about who will not be disabused of this fact, what they think is a fact, that Russia installed Donald Trump as president in 2016, that Russia actually changed vote totals to make sure that Hillary Clinton was defeated, to put their Trump puppet in the White House. Rachel Maddow, I bet to this day, and she could probably say it on her show tomorrow night, and the 15,000 people who watch it would see that and then spread it around, but she called Donald Trump a Russian asset in the White House. all of that, the entire Russia collusion thing was a scam. It was a lie. Yet a great number, maybe half of the people in this country, believe the whole thing was real. It is very difficult to run a fair election, to run a free country, and to run the United States when you have this dynamically opposed realities among one half of the country and then the other half of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorite polls that we did. We already referenced that we have just finished a poll and we're going to release those results next week. But one of my favorite polls that we ever did didn't get the most, national attention, whatever media attention, but it's still my favorite. We did this back in May of 2021. And essentially we asked two series of questions. One was, asking people questions to kind of get a sense of what their media consumption habits were, right? Of the poll respondents. Who's watching Fox? Who's watching CNN? Who's listening to the radio? Who's getting their news from newspapers, et cetera, right? And then the second series of questions that we asked were about perceptions of things that we know, right? Like known facts of things. So we asked them, how much warming has there been, global warming, whatever, since like the late 1800s? How many unarmed black men were shot by police officers in the previous year? How many people were uninsured, didn't have health care? And then asking people like, when are we going to go extinct from climate change, or something like that, right? And the results pretty much exclusively showed that watchers of CNN and MSNBC were way more likely to overstate all of these numbers. I think one of them was like nearly 30% of CNN viewers thought we were going to go extinct from climate change within 50 years of our poll or something like that. Like some absurd things, like some high percentage of CNN viewers, and by high percentage, I mean like, I don't know, 8 to 10% or something like that, thought like thousands of unarmed black men were being mowed down by police officers every year. So like there definitely is the media that you watch definitely has an influence on how you perceive reality. So it wouldn't be shocking to me if a higher percentage of people out there that are just watching the CNNs and watching MSNBC and reading the New York Times and Paul Krugman and all of that, like even though they're going broke and spending way more money on groceries and heating their home and all of this stuff, managing their credit card debt, are just like, it's tough for me, but the economy's doing great. it would not be shocking to me.
But that's where I disagree, because I don't think that the people that we are talking about are reading Paul Krugman's articles in the New York Times. I don't think they're even watching MSNBC or CNN all that much. That's why I think when you take that out of the equation and you just look at the polling data that's happening right now in real time, asking these Americans, whether it's people in Chicago, hey, what do you think about this, border situation, the fact that there are tens of thousands of migrants that are getting all these welfare benefits in Chicago and you're not? What's happening in these areas? The people are livid and they are saying we are not going to support Joe Biden because he is responsible for that. So I get that the New York Times and CNN and MSNBC and these other, legacy media outlets are trying to, preserve their narrative. But I think that is diminishing, because first of all, the New York Times is in financial, turmoil. People are not, ordering the New York Times subscription like they used to 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. People are tuning out from MSNBC and CNN. And if you look at the social media platforms, one of the things that I've noticed a lot recently is that young people in particular, are getting on there and making these viral videos about how difficult it is just, to make ends meet, even if they have two or three jobs. I think that's what's resonating with people. I think that we might be paying just a little bit too much attention to what these, dinosaur media outlets are trying to, spew to the few thousand or 100,000 people who watch their stations or read their, articles on a daily basis. Even if you just look at the numbers of Fox News versus CNN and MSNBC, Fox News just completely trumps them in terms of their viewership. So I wonder if we are still giving the legacy media outlets too much credit for the amount of influence that they used to have, but that they don't have anymore. That's where I'm coming from on this.
Justin, what are your thoughts? Does the media still able to influence people or no?
Yeah, I think they absolutely can. I think they just can't on this issue. I think that this issue is different than other issues because people are faced with it all the time. If they experienced Paul Krugman articles at the same rate that they experienced price increases, then I would say they're more likely to be tricked into thinking the economy is good. But because they're constantly being impacted, they're seeing it all the time, they're feeling it all the time, I think they know everything is more expensive. Like, I think they know that. And it's funny because Donald Trump did a sort of a, you know, are you better off than you were 4 years ago type of thing. And Joe Biden, which was not a smart thing to do because 4 years ago was COVID, right? And Joe Biden came out and was like mocking him for it. Like, obviously everyone's better off than they were 4 years ago, blah, 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 right? And it's like, yeah, that is true because of COVID and the lockdowns and all that stuff. But if all that stuff had happened under Joe Biden, he would have done even worse stuff than what Donald Trump did. It would have been even more authoritarian and worse than it was when Donald Trump was president. And so that isn't what people have. But what people do have in mind is, what was life like before COVID? Mm-hmm. And the reality is, we have, despite that being 4 years ago, 5 years ago now, life before COVID, we've had 5 years to fix it, 4 years to fix it. In a lot of ways, things are better. We're not in lockdowns and, you know, all that stuff, but we're not forced to wear masks everywhere and everything. But we have not gone anywhere near back to what it was like under Donald Trump in the later years of Donald Trump's presidency. We just haven't. Everything is much more expensive. The housing is more expensive, you know, all the stuff that I mentioned earlier. And so how is life better than it was for most of Donald Trump's presidency until COVID happened? It isn't. It's worse. It's obviously worse. And not only that, but we have much more debt than we had back then. And we had way too much debt then. Now we have even more debt now. We're running over $1 trillion deficit every single year, guaranteed. That's the best case scenario. $2 trillion deficits, things like that are now the new normal. That's fueling this whole inflation thing. It's going to make it worse because government has to continue to print money to pay their own bills and everything. It's not getting better. It doesn't look like it's going to get better. And we've got this incredibly uncharismatic, incredibly unconvincing, probably corrupt guy up there. And even if you don't know that he's corrupt, you know he's not convincing and he's not charismatic, and you don't want to run through a brick wall because he's inspiring you to, right? And so, like, I just don't think that the New York Times and CNN and MSNBC can do enough to overcome that. What they can do, I think, is keep telling everybody that Donald Trump is the next Hitler. And some people will probably believe that. But will they believe that the economy is good? No, they will not believe the economy
Justin,
is good.
Justin.
I guess, wait, real quick. But I guess what's craziest to me, because, like, you know, I don't like disagree with, like, the sentiment that, like, people can see it, right? They see it every time they go to the grocery store, every time they drive past a gas station. Like, I get it. But, like, they're trying. Right. Like the legacy media and whatever, like, it's so transparent that they're trying to just feed us all propaganda. So it's like, do you have to, you know, there's a whole bunch of polls out there that also show that people's, like, loss in trust in kind of, like, the mainstream media and all of that. It's like, can we understand why? Like, it seems pretty obvious why that's the case. Like, when it's raining outside and they're like, no. Now, that's just conservative propaganda. It's actually sunny outside. Go out there. You don't need an umbrella. You'd be like, I don't trust you. I don't trust you anymore. I feel like all of these articles is just, like, all the proof that you ever need to not trust these people anymore.
This is where we get into this whole misinformation and disinformation BS that we hear from the corporate media, that anything that goes against basically the messaging of the regime is labeled misinformation or disinformation. And this is not a phenomenon unique to the United States. This is happening all over the quote unquote Western world. And we didn't used to hear that when I was younger, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, the idea that somebody else's opinion is misinformation and needs to be silenced. All that does is just setting the table for silencing all dissent. And so, again, that's a symptom of that, of the fact that we live in two different universes, because, you know, if you think that the other side is such a threat and such an enemy that they must be silenced, it's hard to reconcile that when you live in those two different kinds of universes.
The mainstream media, CNN and MSNBC in particular, have become instruments of the Democrat Party. That is a fact. You can just go and watch and you can see it. But Donnie, here's the big difference. In 2017, 2018, 2019, they were not saying, hey, look how great the economy is due to Trump's, you know, policies of deregulation, energy, you know, production, and low taxes. They were saying, actually, the economy is terrible. And people were like, what are you talking about? Now, fast forward to 2024, when the economy is terrible, they're saying, actually, the economy is great. You just don't know it. People can see through that. That's all I'm saying, is that on that narrow topic, they can see through that. But going back to what Justin said, and this is what I've noticed, their tactic to try to influence the 2024 election is simple. It's a two-pronged attack. Donald Trump is a dictator. He is Hitler. Yes, that is their constant line of attack. And also abortion, abortion, abortion. That is what they are trying to make this 2024 election about. Donald Trump is a dictator. There will be no more elections after this. They literally are saying that he will, you know, suspend the Constitution and he will just declare dictatorship on day one. And also that he will make it illegal for an abortion to be had across the country after, you know, like 2 weeks or whatever. I am not kidding. So they aren't really engaging on the economy because they know that that's a losing issue. Interestingly, this week I have seen a couple CNN commentators, when they do their like economic analysis, come in and actually call it for what it is. And I was like, whoa, I can't believe I'm seeing this. But I think that they have realized that we cannot just keep gaslighting the American people when it's so blatantly obvious. When they go to the store, when they just pay their bills, they know that the economy is not in good shape. They know that inflation is making it very difficult to make ends meet. They can't lie and make that go away. They just can't. But they can lie about other things like the Russia collusion or anything like that. Yes, they can lie through their teeth about that. And people would have to go and actually really study that stuff. And that would take hours and hours and hours. But it doesn't take hours and hours and hours of studying, you know, rigorously, the fact that inflation is up 20, 30, 40% across the board. People feel that every single second of every single day, and it's getting worse, not better.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got like a family vacation thing that's coming up, where it's like a big family reunion or whatever. And I know that there's a lot of people on the left side of the aisle there that are often very vocal on social media. And I just wonder, like, if those people are going to try to convince me, like, no, the economy's doing great. What are you talking about? Like, that to me will be like the ultimate proof of whether or not this like propaganda is really like seeping into some of your average day people. But
if I were you, I would actually kind of flip that around, because I talk with people who are on the complete other end of the spectrum on all this stuff. And, you know, whenever they start talking about, you know, Donald Trump, I just ask him very simply, hey, are you better off now under 3 years of Joe Biden than when you better, or were you better off under the first 3 years of Donald Trump? And they have nothing they can say back to that. And they know that. So I think just flip it on them.
Gentlemen, we talked about a lot today. There's probably some that we reserve for the cutting room floor, but anything else that you want to chat about? Any anecdotes, anything you want to get off your chest, anything like that? Hearing nothing, I will say thank you to all of our viewers for tuning in to this episode of the In the Tank podcast. Join us every week for a new episode. For those audio-only listeners that are probably catching our show on a Friday or later, you can join us a day earlier on Thursdays at noon Central Time, where we are live streaming on Facebook and YouTube and Rumble and X, and you can join the conversation. Throw your comments and questions in the chat. Maybe we'll show your comment on the screen. Maybe we'll address your questions on the fly. Super chat functionality is enabled if you want to support the show that way. If you want to support the show by not spending a dollar, but spending just a couple of seconds, hitting that subscribe button, sharing this content, hitting that like button, or just leaving a comment under the video, all helps break through those big tech algorithms that prevent content like this from being shown to more people. Jim Lakely, where can the fine people find you?
At Jay Lakely on Twitter X, at Heartland Inst on Twitter X, and also visit heartland.org.
Fantastic. Justin Haskins, same question.
At Justin C. Haskins on Facebook and X.
Fantastic. And Chris Talgo, what do you have to pitch today?
StoppingSocialism.com. Jack McFerrin, has been posting lots of great content up there, so please go check it out.
Yeah, and Ella McPherson's also adding some content, I think, on a daily basis. That's fake news. I'm sorry, everybody. But thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you next week.
Soldier.